Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome back to She and Her Season 2. Thanks so much for all of your great feedback so far. We've been having a blast with this season. And on deck today, periods.
Menstruation.
Menses, that time of the month. So we've been talking about doing a show on this for a long time. And today we are going to explore both the personal and political implications of periods. And we're going to talk about the fact that the messages that women receive about periods are really mixed, to say the least.
So you're about to hear an excerpt from a conversation we had with Sarah Rhodes and Katie Brown, two microbiology graduate students in the School of Public Health at UNC Chapel Hill. And they have been raising awareness about public health gaps in period policy. So we started our conversation with Katie and Sarah by sharing our own period stories. This has been a process for me preparing for the show and preparing to tell my period story because, honestly, I've always been relatively private about it. So it's really caused me to interrogate why, which is good. But I actually remember when it was elementary school, fifth grade, so right before you go to junior high. And we'd had, I guess, what would be called a sexual education class, and the boys were pulled aside to learn about God knows what. And we were pulled aside, and the educator definitely brought somebody from the outside, came and explained to us periods, and they gave us mirrors for us to look at our vagina.
Oh, yeah. For real? That's advanced.
Yes. That's actually very
That's really awesome.
Yeah, I mean, but then, like, a couple, maybe the next week was DARE graduation. And I just remember waking up the day, I guess this was like their real cap, you're going to junior high. Yeah. You get your sexual education thing and your DARE graduation. And I didn't make it to DARE graduation because I woke up that morning, my God, my stomach hurts so bad. And then come to find out that's because I'd started my period.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's ruined DARE graduation for me.
Threw a wrench in that graduation.
Yeah. What about you, Anita?
So I didn't get mine until eighth grade, and I remember all of my friends had theirs, and at a certain point I was like, okay, I'm ready for this, like, I want to be part of the gang, you know, everyone else has, like, is walking around with pads and tampons, and, like, I want to be part of this, but I had this prolonged period of, like, 3 months where I kept thinking I was going to get my period, so I tell my mom, like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get my period today, or, like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get it this week, and she's like, you know, you don't have to stress so much about preparing for it, like, when you get it, we're going to figure it out. But I was like, no, I got to have all the supplies. So I would, like, bring – I had, like, pads and all of this stuff, like, ready.
You were prepped.
I had an arsenal. I, like, had them in my book bag. So I was like, I know it's going to happen. And then it would be, like, a few days where I'd be like, oh, I felt something. Like, it's definitely happening.
Just super, like, positive.
Yes. So I would, like, go to the bathroom and, like, put on a pad, like, in preparation. And then, like, nothing would happen.
It's like a Seventh Heaven episode.
Yeah, this is so much anticipation.
Actually, yes. I remember that.
Beverly. Yes.
So much anticipation. But it wasn't until, I think it was like a number of months later that I finally got it. And I was like at home. And I remember being like downstairs and realizing it. And then even though, like, I'd already prepped, like, I knew it was happening in my mind, I, like, couldn't, you know, go through the motion. So I, like, waddled to the bottom of the stairs and, like, called upstairs and I was like, Mom, I'm like, I think it finally happened.
She's like, are you sure?
Yeah, exactly. I made it very dramatic. But I was thinking about in preparation for this that I didn't. I had a fear of tampons, or like I felt like I like couldn't wear them, something wasn't right.
That was real.
Like I tried to put them in and it didn't work, and I didn't start wearing tampons until freshman year of college when my dear roommate and friend like came to the bathroom at the end of the hall and like talked me through putting in a tampon.
Yeah, and I mean, I think I waited till high school before I did because I was always like, that's for the big girls.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. So there's sort of like steps. I was thinking about how there's like these steps in your like comfort with your own experience of having a period where you're like, I don't know, I can't handle that. Like, that's getting too close.
We also broke through one just a few minutes ago about using tampons without applicators.
Right.
That's true.
So this was going to be the next step.
Promoting the use of tampons without applicators.
Yes.
Because you should be able to touch your own vagina.
That's true.
I agree.
No, I totally agree.
Not put a bunch of bleach in it.
Getting close.
So there's some natural, there's some good natural stuff out there, y'all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. How about y'all? What are your first period stories?
Okay, y'all. This is Sarah. Hey, Sarah. Here's my period story on the air. So I was sort of on Anita's track with my period being really late. The first experience with periods was when I was 9 years old and there was someone, I was in the bathroom with my friend and she was like, holy moly, what is going on? Something is happening. And I just remember having no idea what she was talking about, and she was in the stall. And so we went and got the teacher and was like, what is happening? We do not know what's happening. There is blood. And we do not know why this is happening. And it was really scary because, I had never had a talk with my parents before about this. And neither had she. So we were both just, I was just the friend witnessing this happening to my friend. After that, I was like waiting from the time I was 9. But I, was dancing a lot, had a lot of activity. And I think I just was not going to get my period for a while. And I ended up getting it when I was like 16. So it was kind of late. Mm-hmm. And so it was a lot of anticipation of just hearing all this stuff, seeing everyone go through it, which is kind of, is actually lucky to be able to have friends go through it and be able to, because they're talking about it to you. Mm-hmm. And, we actually, in some of my friend group, they were like, Sarah, this is going to happen. And it was something where they were like, my elders who were like, this will happen to you. And my mom was more, my parents didn't really talk to me about it. My dad never would talk to me about it. But my mom was just like, one day there was like a book that just appeared on my bed that was like, oh my God, this is your body.
Yes.
And so I remember, and
was
that was.
What book was it? Was it Our Bodies Ourselves?
It was that Total American Girls book.
Oh. Not familiar.
Which I don't remember. Yeah, there was like American Girl produced this book and it had like pictures of
God,
how your breasts.
Yeah. It's actually pretty baller.
Yeah, so there was like this beautiful diagram of how your breasts would develop from like the little mosquito bites to like what it should be actually. And then there was like this one page, but it was really crude about periods. So it still was not, not that good. My mom was still not really willing to talk to me about it. But I was, definitely privileged and lucky to have that, even just that book put on my bed. But so 16 years old on an airplane.
Oh.
And just was like, airplanes kind of freak me out anyway. But I was on this airplane and all of a sudden my ears are popping, which always happens. And it just feels like really weird. And then I get this like cramps in my abdomen. And I was just like, what the heck is going on? This plane feels so different. I don't know why this is happening. And then I went to the bathroom and there it was. I just saw, some red stuff on my underwear. And I was like, dang, y'all, this is definitely happening. But it was something where, at that point, my mom was pretty worried because she had finally started talking about it because she was like, why has this happened to you yet? And so she had really been asking me kind of obsessively. And then at that point, when I actually got it, I was like, I don't want to tell her. This is, for some reason, I just feel like ashamed and strange about this. So I went down, sat next to my mom back on the plane and was just kind of silent. But then finally, when I got off, I was like, Mom, I need to talk to you.
I need
some help. And so that was kind of the moment where my mom was like, all right, we're going to use some pads. This is what a pad is. This is what a tampon is. Usually people start with pads and move up from there, which I think is definitely the trend.
Yeah.
Of,
So
sticking something up your vagina is definitely a little scarier, which of course it is when you haven't really explored
uncharted territory.
But I definitely remember having this experience where you're like, what is even going on down there?
Yeah.
So it's just And I hadn't really even dated at that point, so I was just like, okay, I need to figure this out. So I remember we were going to Maine to visit some family friends, went into the bathroom and was just like, I'm just going to look at this. And got in the mirror, kind of, leg up, check it out, see what's going on, but also had the experience of putting the pad in your underwear for the first time where you're like, this is a diaper.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And walking around and feeling so ashamed and just feeling like you have this huge thing that everyone can see.
Can anybody see this?
Yes.
And you feel like you smell.
Yeah, you have the smell like situation where you're like, this kind of smells. And no one, and why didn't any of my friends tell me that this smells?
Yes.
Because they didn't tell me that.
So Sarah and I talked about this before. Mm-hmm. This is Katie. Mm-hmm. We've got a little bit of cadence from Sandra here. So a little Georgia draw versus a North Carolina
That's right.
draw. So my period story is basically the same, but the polar opposite of Sarah's, where my family has historically started their period very early. This is just a maternal trait. And my older sister started her period early. And I had a really supportive mother, was exposed to it from my sister, who's about 2.5 years older than I am. And for some reason, when I started my period, I was probably about 11, maybe even 10, young, too young, mm-hmm. right? Well, not too young, but younger.
I think it's too young for
me. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And even though I was exposed to it, I hid it. And I hid it for years.
Really?
Hid it from your family?
From my family.
Wow.
And I don't know why. I'm still in this kind of interrogating myself as to why, because I feel like maybe that's some kind of association with my, I don't know. Even while I was doing this period work, this menstruation work that we're doing, I keep asking myself, what is it? I had all of the supportive infrastructure, this family, my mother's support, my sister's support, and for some reason I was ashamed. And so if people don't know this, oftentimes when you're around women, you sync up your menstruation. So I basically synced with my sister. And so we'd have, having periods at the same time. And so I'd be very judicious in my, like, changing of, it was very, like, calculated and how I'd, like, put stuff in the trash and, like, all this was bizarre. And my mother, about kind of similar to what your mother said, maybe I was 13 or 14, and she said, she just very sad answered, like, have you? And I was like, oh, yeah, I started that a while ago. And I saw the look of hurt on her face.
You're like, four years ago.
And, I'm a very transparent person. Like, everybody can, support that. But I don't know, something about that basic thing that occurred to me, I was ashamed, and I hid it. And, all the kids would go out there and play at recess, at lunch, and I'd have awful cramps, and I'd have to be like, I just can't, my stomach hurts, because I couldn't be like, I'm on my period.
Right, totally.
I'm a baby, I'm on my period. So that difficulty and also that kind of self-imposed taboo and hiding it, I think is one of the kind of instigators for some of the work that we've done.
All right, let's take a quick break and check in with our moms. Every episode this season, they're going to be chiming in about the topic at hand. So this week, we asked them to share their own period stories.
Oh, well, I think I can even remember the color of my underwear.
Tell me everything.
Well, I think, back in the day when I got my period, I think I was about 12, but in those days, we didn't have, like, sanitary towels that had like the sticker at the bottom, so you had to wear a belt, and you looped the loop of the sanitary pad onto the belt, so it was pretty special. And it was called a Dr. White. The pad was called Dr. White's, and they were like, it was like a gauze on the outside. So it's, you mean what you get now is super sophisticated. So it was just horrible.
Oh my God.
But I was really proud. I was really proud to wear my first Dr. White's. I thought that was super cool. And the other really sort of sad part of it for me was that I think at the same time that I got my period, my brother, Uncle Steve, developed a kidney cancer. So he was passing blood in his urine. So everybody was like looking and worrying about if there was any blood in the toilet. And
oh,
I was feeling sort of super, I was feeling super awkward, that like the whole family would know about it because we were all worried about him and his blood in his urine. And then I had my period. So it was like a difficult time.
Yeah.
But
did you go tell your mom right away, or what do you remember about that part of it?
Oh yeah, right away, because I get there, because they had to, we had to get me in my own belt and stuff. I mean, I thought that was cool. And like, it was like, you're becoming a woman, you got your own belt.
Oh man.
But at least there were pads. I mean, going back another generation, they didn't even have anything at that time, so at least they had sanitary pads.
It's true, you weren't in a red tent.
No red tents, no. No, 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 no. No red tents. God, come on. The red tent. Oh, yeah, all funny right. time.
Thank you, Maud.
Oh, my goodness. Golly, well, I do remember it. And it was on a Sunday. And I was 11 years old. And I remember exactly what I had on, actually, because we had been to Sunday school and church. And I had on this navy wool long-sleeved sailor dress with this big white sailor collar. And I think it must have been when we'd come home after church and I was getting ready for lunch. And I remember going into the bathroom upstairs to use it and then thinking, oh. And I believe my mom had prepared me in the sense of I knew, you know, pretty much knew exactly what that was. And back in that day and age, the only products I knew about were Kotex. And the pads were really thick, but they were not the way they are now. They didn't adhere to your underwear, and the way that you wore them was you had a what was called a sanitary belt, which was this.
My God!
Oh, it was quite the thing. Which was this thin strip of elastic that was continuous, went around your waist, and then in the front and in the back there was a strip that extended down, and at the end of that was this little metal piece. And what you did was you put the end of the tab through the metal piece, and you wrapped it around a couple of times, and there was this tiny little prong at the base of the metal piece, and then you kind of yanked the gauze strip down, and that's what secured it.
I mean, you lost me already because I'm terrible at visualizations, but that sounds elaborate.
It was elaborate.
Well, you really witnessed the technology evolve, didn't you, Mom?
I did. Yes, I did.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So before we return to our conversation with Katie and Sarah, I want to take a moment and talk about what strikes me about these period stories that we shared. So on the one hand, women are raised knowing that getting your period is this huge seminal life moment and rite of passage. Mm-hmm. It's a really big deal. On the other hand, we receive all of these messages that make us feel like we need to keep it secretive and private. And those two things really don't work well together.
Yeah, and the stigma around periods also shows up in a lot of public health policy, or at least that's what Katie and Sarah began to notice when they did a literature review on public health infrastructure around periods, looking both nationally and globally. And they learned that although periods are something that produces waste that half of the world's population deals with, there are major gaps in public health infrastructure and planning, and those gaps are local and global. So they developed a demonstration to educate scholars and people who don't menstruate about the embodied experience of having a period, which they describe here.
So we came up with this analogy because we realized that people don't actually know what it's like. So I use this analogy of Campbell's chunky tomato soup. So I don't know any of y'all who have ever seen a pad. Sarah actually mentioned this before, that a pad is like a diaper. It is designed almost in a NASA type way to absorb not just like fluids, but also like chunky stuff, right? So all folks out there who don't menstruate, and you'll hear us actually use the phrase people who menstruate versus women. because mm-hmm. we want to emphasize that people have different gender identities mm-hmm. and that menstruation is not necessarily something that makes you a woman. So all folks out there who don't menstruate, I want you to think about this. So you have your underpants, right? I want you to take this pad, and basically it's a strip of a diaper with the sticky substance on the back. I want you to put it to your underpants, and I want you to put about a couple of tablespoons of Campbell's chunky tomato soup onto that. Mm-hmm. You're going to pull your pants on and you're going to walk around. You're going to have a good time, but then you're going to think, oh my gosh, I'm sitting in this pad filled with Campbell's chunky tomato soup.
Yes, yes.
I don't know if it's leaking out of my pants. It's uncomfortable. It's wet. Well, you're at work.
It smells.
It smells. Mm-hmm. And you're worried about it smelling. It may leak out of your pad. Mm-hmm. And so you're not really familiar with this. So you're at work. You may have a presentation to give. You're standing up in front of this group presenting your hard work that you've done, mm-hmm. and all you can think about in the back of your head is the Campbell's chunky tomato soup leaking out of the side of this pad into the front of my khakis. Mm-hmm. That's all you can think about. Just in the back. So you may position yourself a little bit less dominantly behind a chair so no one sees your kind of crotchal region. But luckily, thank God, in your office building, you have access to mm-hmm. a toilet facility that is, you know, that multi-stall number that you get that's basically a public restroom within mm-hmm. your facility. You walk in there, you go into the stall, you rip off your Campbell's Chunky Tomato Soup soaked pad, you roll it up in some toilet paper, you put it in this mm-hmm. you know, waste bin next to you, close the lid.
In the stall.
In yeah. the stall.
Lock door.
It. Lock the door. Mm-hmm. Close the stall. Close the lid. But I'm sorry, you have to put on a new pad because Uncle Banky put on some more Campbell's Chunky Tomato Soup.
Yeah.
But luckily, what you can do is you can walk out. You can wash your hands with some soap. There's a mirror mm-hmm. there. You can check your khakis. Mm-hmm. Right? And if you do have a stain, you have the capacity to wash it off discreetly.
Or cover it up with a sweater.
Yeah, cover it up with a sweater. The old sweater
old
around
the
trick.
Waist trick.
Sweater
trick.
Definitely done that.
Yes. Yeah. And then you can go back to your business. You may be sitting there. You know, you may have a meeting with someone and you think, oh my gosh, do they smell the Campbell's chunky tomato soup that's sitting in my pants? Right? But luckily, you know, you go through the day, you may not stay in your pants. You go sit home, you go sit in your car, you're sitting in this Campbell's chunky tomato soup. It's uncomfortable. In traffic, you go home, you can take a shower, you get in bed. I'm sorry, you have to put another pad and some more Campbell's mm-hmm. chunky tomato soup in mm-hmm. your pad. You sleep okay, but you wake up the next morning and there's Campbell's chunky tomato soup all over your bed. And so you have to clean it up a little bit, you know, but you can wash your stuff. It's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. So take another shower. Then you can go, I'm sorry, you have to put more Campbell's chunky tomato soup and a pad into your underpants, into your khakis. You go to work, but then you find out, wow, in this bathroom that I depended on, that basically I managed this thing for the past day, you find that the door that you originally walk into in the multi-stall bathroom, mm-hmm. there's no door. You think, oh my gosh, people can just walk into the bathroom. Mm-hmm. But then you find out that in the stall, this lock that was on the door that you wanted mm-hmm. to stop the door from swinging open, mm-hmm. it's not there. So you're worried, as someone who doesn't menstruate, not really, you know, accustomed to it, that as you're changing this chunky tomato soup pad, that someone's going to walk in you doing that. So you're holding the door with one hand, trying to do it with the mm-hmm. other, mm-hmm. you know, and then you look and you recognize, oh my gosh, there's no toilet paper. I can't really clean myself. Mm-hmm. And then you recognize, oh wait, the bin that I was really mm-hmm. dependent upon to throw away this thing is not, mm-hmm. is, you know, it may not have a top, or maybe it's not even there. Right? Now I want you to think about, okay, what if in that bathroom, there's no soap to wash your hands? What if there's no sink? What if there's no running water? Now, I want you to imagine that there's no mirror for you to actually check to see if you have these stains on your clothes that you're really worried about, because obviously it signals to people that you have Campbell's chunky tomato soup in your pants. And then I want you to imagine that this pad, this thing, again, that is NASA-derived to manage this chunky tomato soup, mm-hmm. you have to replace it with a rag or cotton or soil, sand, feathers, all these things. Now, I want you to imagine that you can't actually wash that out. And it's soaked with Campbell's chunky tomato soup. And you have to keep adding it to it, right? So there's no way for you to actually manage that. Now, I want you to imagine that there's no toilet. And I want you to imagine that there's no infrastructure, there's no building, there's no stall, there's nothing. And you are literally standing in the middle of your community with Campbell's chunky tomato soup dripping down your leg where everyone can see it. that is the situation for millions, if not billions, of people who menstruate around the world.
Yes. Now think about that as, you know, this is not just a couple of days like Katie described that this is happening, but now imagine having to do this for 2 to 7 days of the week, every month, for up to 40 years of your life. And just think about how long that actually is. And now think about half of the population of the world being composed of people who menstruate, including women and girls. Half of those people are of reproductive age, meaning that within this month, this exact month that we're in, close to 2 billion people will menstruate. And menstruation, as some of us who do menstruate know, doesn't just include bleeding, but it also includes symptoms that could include mood swings or really nasty abdominal cramps, all these different things that you're
diarrhea,
managing.
Diarrhea. Back pain, fatigue.
Absolutely.
I remember someone in my high school fainting from her cramps.
It actually affects your mobility as a person. And we know that 2.5 billion people of 7 billion in this world do not have access to toilets, as we were describing, which means that presently greater than 1 in 7 people are experiencing this lack of infrastructure that Katie describes. But it's really important for us to mention that also the infrastructure that Katie describes is one that is very Western, and this may not be culturally appropriate in many places. And so really what we're saying is, you know, this many people are lacking infrastructure that actually allows them to have privacy, dignity, safety, all these different things that are super important, autonomy, hygiene, mobility. And so, you know, a person may not be able to manage their menstruation in the way that is actually safe.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes locally, that includes right here in this area, that includes globally. But we need to really be thinking about, what does this infrastructure look like, and what does this bring, and how does it provide us these things of, you know, safety, mobility, dignity?
So let's talk. A lot of what you sort of alluded to has to do with shame and secrecy in a lot of ways, that this is something that people who menstruate are experiencing alone and then sort of trying to hide from the people around them. So let's talk a bit about that and what you all know about sort of why that is, what you've looked at that sort of informs why there is so much shame and secrecy around this.
I think there's a lot of cultural taboo. I mean, this is both Western and other, let's say. And I think a lot of the literature that we looked at and a lot of the people that we talked to really perseverated or overly focused on this kind of non-Western taboo that was very oppressive of women. And to a degree, it is. People who menstruate aren't able to go into a kitchen because the pickles and the bread and all that may sour. Beer may sour. They may not be able to go to temple because it may anger the gods. They may not be able to touch shared water sources because it'll taint, that may cause sterility. It may be a situation where these absorbent materials, these pads that they actually have, or rags, what have you, because of the blood that's on them, if someone like a sanitation worker, like someone who comes and picks up your trash, actually touches it, that they could be cursed to death, or, for instance, that someone could take this waste and actually send it to a witch doctor, and they could be cursed. And so when I first approached this research, I'm going to be honest with you, I'm a white lady. I walked at it from this, like, white savior, poor women, global South, oh no, they have no toilets. Here are all these, like, archaic taboos. Oh, bless their hearts. And I was finishing my master's, and I walked away from it because I was overwhelmed. I was incredibly emotionally invested in the stories of these women that we read, especially schoolgirls, because that's what a lot of the literature focuses on, because they don't go to school, and they may drop out of school, and that has huge implications for the socioeconomic health of an entire country, because you don't have women in the economy because they didn't finish school.
Because they do not have access to infrastructure that is important for managing menstruation.
And so basically I came back and realized that I was in this very colonized state of mind. But guys, let's think about the latest Playtex / Tampax commercial that you saw. What is the color of the fluid that they pour on the pad?
Is it blue?
Blue.
Yeah.
Blue.
Always blue. Never
always
red.
Blue, yeah.
Well, that's a commercial. What is the color of the blood in the gratuitous violence that is in all these TV shows right
totally.
Now?
Totally.
Yeah.
It's red.
It is bright red. You may even see an organ popping out on non-cable television. But menstrual blood, goodness gracious, blue, mobility, we're not even going to say, you know, periods
well,
or menstruation.
Well, and it's like on Instagram, you'll have to remind me the name of the person, but...
Ruby. I don't know how to pronounce her last name, K-U-A-R. Yeah.
But she put a picture up of her, I guess, napping, and she had some menstrual blood on her pants. And this was a part of a bigger project she was working on to destigmatize that. And Instagram took it down twice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yet you can go on Instagram and see these hypersexualized images of women. So it really sends a message about what images are valued and considered appropriate in our society. Unless people think that it's not as bad here, there are two memes that I think of that I've seen circulating around the internet that really show this cognitive dissonance.
Mm-hmm.
One is, it's a joke for women, and it's like, if you you bleed once a month, you can survive anything. And then there's a male version of that where it's like, you can't trust anything that bleeds once a month and lives through it. But that's real. Like, I've seen that pretty often. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Well, I mean, I think that you brought it back to kind of the shame and taboo where, you know, they're the dominance. And I'm going to go into the patriarchy for a second.
Yes.
But when we think about the people who've decided on the management design of policy, sanitation, health care for however many years, it's been male. And so when we think about this... it being salient, you know, menstruation is not an experience that this kind of cis heteronormative male has had. And we've been acculturated to say, well, we're ashamed about it. We're not going to talk about it. It's revolting. It's a condition. In the second wave of feminism, there was a great woman named Germaine Greer. And she talked about the shroud of secrecy and how menstruation is a central part of women's health, women's embodied experiences, women's life. But however, these original feminists didn't really openly discuss it, and she phrased it as something called an eloquent silence, where it came from basically from the dangerous womb, and it centered on the secrecy underlying a persistent revulsion of menstruation. And so even within ourselves, we have that.
We've internalized that. I mean,
and I feel like you see that. If you think about this last political cycle, there's sort of this concern. The way that menstruation often comes up is like, is this going to affect how a woman is in the workplace, right? Like,
definitely.
Is she going to be too emotionally reactive? Is she going to be too, you know, unpredictable at particular times? And I was reading this.
It's used to control.
Yeah,
control
and this critique about how there was this narrative around, well, Hillary is postmenopausal, so like we don't have to worry about that. Like we can ensure that she's going to, you know, she's not going to be affected
clear-headed.
By these hormones. It's sort of this like black or white thing. Like either we don't talk about it or if we're talking about it, we're talking about how it makes women unpredictable and out of control.
Dangerous.
And dangerous, right.
And the thing about it is menstruation is a healthy sign of reproductive health. I mean, it is something where your body is literally getting rid of these eggs that are dying, that are dead, that are unfertilized, that are just actually kind of really bad for the continuation of a healthy human race. That is what menstruation is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we as a primate, other primates, bats, and the elephant shrew,
which we learned.
Yes, we learned just recently, are the only species, animals that menstruate.
Huh.
And so when we think about it being a condition, but rather a vital like part of the continuation of human race, it's really important to emphasize.
That's our show. Thank y'all so much for listening. And if you want to find out more about She and Her, hit us up on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at She and Her Radio. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and all those other places, which I can never remember the names of, but we appreciate y'all for being out there.
Yes, and it is both Women's History Month and Tripod Month. So Tripod is a national initiative that tons of podcasters are participating in, which encourages people who listen to podcasts to tell their friends, family members, and loved ones about what podcasting is if they don't know, how to find podcasts, how to subscribe to them, and what their favorite podcasts are. So we'd love to hear about what your favorites are. Tweet them at us with the hashtag TryPod, and we'll be sure to retweet and reshare and help spread the word about podcasting.
And if you like ours, don't hesitate to share it with hashtag TryPod either.
Exactly.
We want to thank Anna Canada, our fabulous intern and friend, Cameron Laws and Sam Garwick for composing our theme music, and Sarah Rhodes and Katie Brown for the great work that they're doing. We'll catch you next week.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks, you're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit a million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.